Sex is good. Kuba Ohms wrote that sexy intro music. We're going to get to hear more of it as the show progresses. Sex is good, and he is the winner of the National Songwriting Competition in Canada, and I can attest to this live, he and his band are brilliant. Welcome to Love, Lust, and Laughter, Kuba.
Thanks, Diana. How are you?
Good, good. I want to tell the audience that you were born and raised in Victoria, B.C., and you've been a fixture on the Canadian music scene for quite a few years, I guess. And say again?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. 20 years, yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a good ride, though.
A good ride.
It's a great place for music.
Yeah, wonderful. The phone connection is not great, so you might just stay in place or whatever so that we can hear every word of yours and also hear your music. So you were interviewed in Ageless Living magazine, and I do a column in that same magazine, and that's how I happened to be at the Health Expo on March 1st, where in the evening you played, and boy, does your music ever make people want to get up and dance. And so Brian and I had a lot of fun dancing and listening to your music. I mean, you're brilliant, and I sure like your music.
Well, I really appreciate that. Getting people up and dancing, it's really a part of the whole thing. I think it's an important part of what we do as musicians. It's just when people get up and start dancing, it means that the energy is just going off, and it's really what we're all about.
It must be very contagious, and I know when in the past when I've done live theater, it's wonderful to feel the audience's energy, and you must be feeling that too.
Well, I do a lot of improv when I play live, and that performance at the fundraiser gala I did a lot of improv there, and it is a lot about the energy. It's a lot about the energy in the room, and, you know, I may even see somebody out in the crowd that inspires me and start singing about them or sort of making a story up about them in my mind or whatever, and singing it out, but yeah, it really is about the energy.
About the energy, as so much of life is. So I wanted to ask you, sex is good. I heard it that night, March 1st, exactly a week ago. This is April Fool's, but we're just going to have fun. And let me ask you, though, have you ever had an April Fool's prank played on you?
Not really specifically on me. I think it was last year. I think it was the year before there was an April Fool's prank going around on Facebook that John Bon Jovi died, which is pretty funny because everyone was talking about that all day, and then it turned out to be an April Fool's prank. Otherwise, you know, I'm not big on that, you know, practical jokes or pranks. To be honest with you, it's kind of don't get me wrong, I love jokes, I love humor, but practical jokes kind of.
We are going to talk some about humor and laughing because your dad gave you some very good advice. But let's kind of work up to that. April Fool's is kind of a fun day, and I want this interview to be happy, and I want people to experience your music. And your website is kubaohms.com. That's KUBAOMS.com. And when I do the write-up after the show, I'll put that there, of course. So tell us about writing the song Sex is Good. I know you have a certain philosophy about sex, and I'm sure that played into writing that song.
Well, to be honest, I was at a show, and like I said, I do a lot of improv, and a lot of the demographic that comes to our show are women, and they're all dancing and grooving out and having a good time. And I sort of hollered out to God, give me a topic, right? Which is something I often do. You know, I just sort of say, give me a topic, and I'll sort of make something up. And, of course, one of the natives yelled out, sex. And so I just started going. And Paul already had a chord progression that he'd been working on, so he started with a cool chord progression, which is a guitar player. And he started improvising, and by the end of the two-year, had the big hook, sex is good. And, you know, upon its inception, even the whole crowd was singing it by the end of it, so it was pretty special moment. And a cool way to write the song, you know, live in the moment in an actual show.
So you did it, live in the moment. I'm quoting you from Ageless Living, the article they did about you. You said, I think sex is a really good way to stay balanced and fit and happy. Hear, hear. And you said, when you feel sexy and you're sexual, and you are sexual, your self-esteem is higher and you feel fitter and more balanced. You're a man after my own heart. And that's very well stated, and I think people are better balanced and happier when they're sexual.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's the way I look at, you know, when they're sexual, exactly. I like how you said that. You know, I mean, it doesn't even necessarily have to be when they're having a lot of sex. I mean, you don't necessarily have to be having a lot of sex to be feeling sexual. You know, I look at sex as kind of being under an umbrella, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the main umbrella is love. And love is the most powerful energy on the planet. I mean, I think that, you know, darkness can't live in light. And anger or fear or depression or any of these just things can't live under in the light of love. And sex and sexuality falls right underneath that umbrella of love. It's a very powerful energy. And so if you're feeling sexy, it means you're feeling the love, you're loving yourself, feeling good about yourself, therefore your self-esteem is going to be high. And you're going to attract, you know, people of like energy. And I think that it's an energy that's a little bit suppressed, and not only in Western society, but all over the world. And, you know, it's being something that, you know, in some cases, even a bad thing or a dirty thing or something to keep to yourself or keep behind closed doors and all that sort of stuff. But overall, I think that it's a very powerful energy and a really important energy to celebrate.
And when you talk about ADHD, and that's the name of your new album, you say it's the inability to focus on what's really important, and that is love. And
What I was kind of meant there was that, you know, yeah, kids are, people are so, especially in the younger generation, they're so caught up in their toys and their tech gadgets and their phones, and, you know, they're don't really have the ability to focus on, you know, more important things, which is love, or which is, you know, the classic case of even smelling the roses or being outside and enjoying the fresh air. I mean, people's heads are down at their phone, and, you know, I was diagnosed with a small degree of ADHD, and I know that there's people, and you know, with much more severe cases, and it's a real challenge for them. And I don't know, I think that the basis of that comment is just that, you know, if we can stay focused on what's most important, which is love, then life will be good.
So, but you also kind of integrated the ADHD into your work, because you said when you're covering genres ranging from pop to electronic to soul to reggae and funk, well, the ADHD reflects a personal embrace of what makes us who we are, and we go back to that.
It's true. I mean,
to love again.
When I was a kid, my mom, it was called hyperactivity.
Right,
know?
Right.
And, and she would say she thought I had that or whatever, and nobody really listened and whatever, and I'm sure I did, and it's all good. But now, as an adult, you know, and it's funny because my last album and this album, I had a hard time you know, staying focused on one genre, you know, like I love all sorts of music and I can play all sorts of music. So, you know, these albums are really cross a lot of genres, and I try to attribute that a little bit to ADHD, I suppose.
I learned from in the Ageless Living magazine that you and your father and your uncle would have jam sessions, I guess, when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And you come in, so you do have a musical background, and I think you're, you have an Indian, East Indian father and a Scottish mother, so you're an interesting combination. Yeah. So,
it is an interesting, but we're all Canadians. I mean, my dad is born here, my mom was born here, so we're third generation Canadians, but definitely my dad's very dark Indian. My mom's very white, Scottish, and mm-hmm. you know, they're Christians, so they were having Bible studies at the house on Thursday nights, and we were kids, and we weren't really interested in that, but when, at the end of the, my aunts would be there, you know, it was a good group of people, and then at the end, that's when I would come in, just sort of sit in there and just listen, and my uncles and my dad and my aunt would pull out the guitars and the accordion and the banjo and everything and just start rocking. Singing gospel songs, everybody singing, and it was a real influence on me. And, you know, my mom listened to a lot of, black gospel music and really cool, like deep soul music. So that kind of gave me a lot of soul roots, and here we are.
I think you were very fortunate to be exposed to music so early, and of course, it got you hooked.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Yes.
And my buddies all in junior high school, you know, grade, you know, 10th grade, we call it grade 10 and 11 and 12. There were some amazing musicians in my school who really influenced me a lot as well. And they taught me a lot. And we got big beach parties on the weekends. Everybody would sing along. And it was really, we all got into it to pick up sticks. I mean, when you get this whole thing, you know, you get into the music, rock and roll business. Initially, all you really want to do is be a rock star and pick up chicks. That's kind of how kids think. And then as once you do that, you kind of get that out of your system. And then you start to realize the different ways that music can affect people and impact people and how, you know, it's a pretty powerful job to have. And so, you know, as you grow, as an artist, you grow as a person, you grow up a little bit, and I think, now songs of mine have been played in weddings, you know, first dances, and, you know, most important people of people's lives, and played at funerals, and, it's cool. It's not just about, trying to be a star and all that sort of stuff. It's more about trying to just send a positive message out to the world.
So it becomes much more of a personal journey then, too. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more, Cuba. The phone connection, by the way, is still not very good. I don't know what you on your end can do about it, but maybe you can move to a different space or whatever. But I want to know how your music has evolved. And in one of your earlier albums, How Much Time... And by the way, you look extremely handsome on that album cover.
Thank you.
In that black jacket. So you have a song, Beautiful Uncertainty, and that song is about taking risks and living again. And you've also admitted to girl problems, and you dropped out for a while, and you've said that it's funny what a little heartache can do. Would you mind expanding on some of this, the taking risks, living again, dropping out for a while and coming back?
Sure. I mean, Beautiful Uncertainty, I mean, it was written, I had this huge hook, it was really catchy, and I met this guy, he's a huge star in Canada, and we were just discussing about songwriting and stuff, and he sort of taught me one of his challenges that he does, and So I incorporated that into Beautiful Uncertainty. And it was the song was called Beautiful, and it was talking about a girl. And instead, I changed it because I knew that it was really catchy, and I tried to say something a little bit deeper in it. And it was talking mm-hmm. about just that, you know, it's human nature for us all to feel fear in the face of uncertainty. And rather than look at it as a scary thing, to look at it as a beautiful thing. So, you know, it really is about taking risks. And when you get too complacent and too comfortable in your life, I think it's important to, you know, to just get outside your comfort zone and take some risks. And when I talked about pulling back, you know, I had all the you know, big labels, and you asked me whether you wanted to sign me and everything, and I was just young in my life at the time. And, you know, I was in a writer's block. I was having a hard time writing, and I don't know, I needed to shake it up a little bit. So we, I kind of instigated a breakup. It was a bit crazy, and the torment and torture that came out of that, I really learned how to become a, you know, what I'd fancy myself as a pretty good writer. And, but there was a lot of suffering that went through that. And now I've kind of figured out how to do it, and I realize now that I don't have to suffer to write. The right wall. So,
that's good for you to have found out. You don't have to suffer.
Absolutely.
To write. Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
true,
like, you have a life that's more in balance now, and you're still writing really good stuff.
Yeah, thank you. You know, you don't need stimulants, or you don't need up or down, or there are all these sorts of things a lot of artists and musicians have used as tools in the past. Once you figure out how to do it, you know how to do it. So, but sometimes for a lot of us, you have to go through quite an arc of development and make a lot of mistakes to figure it out.
Yeah, you. I'm quoting you in this article from Ageless Living magazine. You said that some things have changed as you've gotten older, and you said, "I've always been keen on strong melodies, but now I have some pretty interesting content in terms of the lyrics." And you want to write about something that is important, that has meaning. And you do that. I mean, I think your lyrics are absolutely fascinating and profound often. But it's about staying balanced.
That was what I was kind of alluding to. Yeah, that's what I was... Thank you, by the way. That's really
You're
kind
welcome.
Of you. That's kind of what I was... alluding to in the last statement there about beautiful is that if you can kind of sneak in a message, and it doesn't have to be preachy, I mean, it certainly shouldn't be preachy, but it doesn't have to be like a groundbreaking message. It could be a message of, you know, about sex or sexuality, which is groundbreaking in a lot of ways, but it doesn't have to be political or anything like that. But if you can kind of sneak in some... sneak in something important or some depth into a pop song, I think you're doing all right, because a lot of the pop music right now on the radio is just about going to a club and shaking your booty and getting smashed, and, you know, which is all fun and everything.
It's fun, but it's kinda, you know, a little superficial.
Superficial, a bit throwaway. It's not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely a... It's more, yeah, it's not something you're going to sit down and talk to your friend about and say, man, I wonder what that means, or, wow, isn't that cool? That's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially, that's what music has always been about. It's been about, you know, from... I was listening a friend of mine, he's Mike Fraser, he's a guy here in Vancouver, he just finished an album with Dave Grohl, and he's, you know, he's worked with everyone from ACDC. Well, man, he's a legend that was managing up here, well, everywhere. And he sent me this link to Helen Keller, where she was listening to, and she's deaf and blind, and she was in New York listening to the symphony on the radio.
Yeah.
Her friends were listening on the radio, and one of her friends suggested, because she can't hear or see, that she put her hand on the speaker. So she gently put her hand on the speaker, and she could hear, quote unquote, the entire symphony and the violin and all the different instrumentation. Even though she's deaf, she could feel it through the frequencies. And, you know, music should have an effect on you like that. And it does have an effect on you like that. I mean, it's all frequencies. Everything is frequencies, really. And
frequencies, yes.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. That's why words are a frequency. You know, the lyrics and the melodies, those are all frequency. And if you're singing about something really dark and nasty, it's going to affect somebody in that capacity. Whereas if you're singing about something really positive and beautiful, it's going to affect somebody in that capacity as well.
You know, that is an amazing story about Helen Keller and putting her hand to the big radio and feeling the frequencies. Imagine, and then she wrote about it later in such an inspiring way. You know, sometimes we take for granted our senses, that we can see, that we can hear, and think about what she had to overcome. And yet she ended up, as many times people with disabilities do, if they don't consider themselves just, you know, I'm a victim, oh, poor me. But she didn't. She persevered, and she was not a victim. She was inspiring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that letter that she wrote to the New York, whoever she wrote it to the symphony, whoever it was, so well written. You know,
yeah.
She's writing that in Braille, and
yeah.
She's an amazing writer.
And yeah.
Without those two senses,
yeah. So then you really do have some wonderful lyrics, and we've already touched a little bit on how you really try to write about something that has some meaning. And not just keep it fluff, right? The content.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, no, it's not to have a happy little medium there.
Yeah. So, can you talk a little bit more about the process in writing your lyrics, which are just fascinating? And people can download, well, they'll download this show, but they can also your website, right? KubaOhms.com.
Yeah.
And since you just had a soft release, I guess that's the terminology, for your most recent album, ADHD, they can actually get a sampling of your music. And we're going to, just before the break, we're going to play one of your recent songs on that album, My Love. So we might even talk about, before we go to that break and listening to that whole song, My Love. So that's a pretty good example of some profound lyrics. Can you talk about the process and what inspired you? It may be personal, but it's going to be interesting for our listening audience, I think.
Well, that song in particular, that song is actually the next single to go out to radio and everything. But that song, My Love, is very autobiographical, actually. It was I met my girlfriend, Catherine, who is not together anymore. We're still best friends, which is great. But
mm-hmm.
I was split up about 5 months ago. And I met her at a music festival.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd been partying, you know. We had finished our set, and we rocked it, and it was like, you know, it was like an all night rave, sort of all night party, and I was kind of ripped, and you know, we hit it off, and she's really it's hard to go into the details. It's kind of upsetting.
Oh, you know, and it may be too personal.
It definitely, if it affects you in any way, it's because it's real. It's literal, and you can sort of listen to the lyrics yourself and sort of piece the story together, and I'm sure you'll be able to figure out what happened.
Yeah, I listened. You must have met her on a Friday night. That was in the lyrics.
Yes, correct.
See, I do listen carefully. But don't you think that your best songs really are personal? Because it comes from your heart.
For sure. I mean, it depends. I mean, sex is good, for example.
Isn't really personal. It's kind of universal. It's kind of like an anthem.
Right.
I think that's a pretty classic song. It's not like something that... It's something that it's more of a message rather than a personal experience. Whereas My Love is, you know, a totally personal experience. But it's hard to say, you know. But I think that a really great melody, you know, and some really... and that just doesn't just mean the singing, a guitar hook or whatever, like a really catchy melody and really strong lyrics. I think you pretty much got a winner every time with that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I want our audience to hear My Love in its entirety. So I've asked Melissa, our wonderful producer, to play that, and then she'll go from that into the break, and then we'll come back after the break. And if any of you have a question for this fascinating guy, Cuba Ohms, you may call, and especially it would be good after the break, 888-874-4888, and then Melissa will put you on the air. She might ask you a question or two, sort of pre-screening, but let's do it. So let's go into My Love. I really do love this song, as well as Sex is Good. I like the whole album. I mean, and I'm remembering that on March the 1st, Brian and I, Charlie's my late husband. That's very interesting that slipped out. But Brian and I really had fun dancing to your music. You've got to put your dancing shoes on and just go for it. So, Melissa, you can start playing My Love and then the break, and then we'll come back, Cuba and I, and we'll talk some more.
I want to be your man, your lover and your friend. I'm going to love you true. I want to be the one you come home to. It was Friday night, the moon was bright, and the band was tight, and I was flying when I met you. You didn't seem to mind spending your time with this crazy guy whose eyes were wide open for you. For a time we had it good, I did the best I could, till I lost you on the way. You stood up for yourself, had to put us on the shelf for another day. And I'll find some peace this time, I'll let you know. Full of alcohol, and then there's dead air on the phone with you. With my disguise, I didn't realize when I was hurting that I was hurting you too. So when I lost my way, couldn't think of what to say, I watched us fall apart. There's an opportunity, it's here for you and me to make another start. And I'll find was
right and the band was tight and I was flying when I met you. You didn't seem to mind spending your time with this crazy guy whose eyes were wide open for you.
Oh, yes, more of Cuba's wonderful music. Didn't you love hearing My Love from his new album, just released, ADHD? And what was it like for you to hear that back? Did it recall some of your experiences with Catherine?
You know what? You know, because at first it was like that, but, you know, I produced the song, so I probably listened to it 1,000 times in the process of producing it and going through it, so the emotional attachment starts to go away after a bit. I think that once I haven't heard it for a while, it would definitely stem those emotions. It certainly does for her.
Oh, interesting.
But,
interesting.
Sorry, go ahead,
Yeah, so, well, I really, really like that song. I like your music so much, and I think people would be doing themselves a big favor to download your tunes. Would you explain to the audience how they can best access your music?
Absolutely. In Canada, it's probably easiest just to go to iTunes. And we're formally not released in the U.S. yet. However, there is a site where you can grab the music. And it's being put up. I guess in the break there, I actually asked my web guy to put it up on the top of our website right now.
Okay.
But it's CubaOhms.bandcamp.com. And all the songs are there.
Bandcamp.com. All right. Would you send that to me, and then when I do the write-up about this program after we end, I'll put that up there?
You better believe it.
Okay, good. So, you know, you are a musician, a writer, a wonderful musician. I love the way you play music. So you know about ways that you can combine music and sex, and that is a theme in a number of your songs. Music really can transform an ordinary sexual experience into a mind-blowing one, and there was a very interesting study conducted by Spotify, and it found out something that was actually pretty remarkable to me. More than 40% of people reported that music played a larger role in sexual arousal than their partner's touch. I was astounded because, you know, as a sex therapist, I'm always encouraging people to touch more. And, you know, our bodies have all these erotic possibilities from the top of our heads to the tip of our toes. And some people get stuck between the legs, so I'm always encouraging more touch and different kinds of touch. But here Spotify found out that music played a really important role in their sexual experience. What have you observed or experienced or been told by some of your fans about your music and their sex lives, if you can share any stories?
Well, to be honest, that's a little bit surprising. I've never heard that. It's quite something.
The Spotify thing?
Music is nice.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that.
You know, I mean, you can see at an actual concert or at a show that some people are getting pretty aroused, even just at the show, you know, in public from the music. It's quite something. But, I mean, I think music is an anchor. So, you know, when you're a kid and say you had your first dance at your elementary school, you know, grade 7, you had your first dance with the girl you had a crush on as a kid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a song playing, and whenever you hear that song, it brings back that memory.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking that music could have a really strong impact with that, because you know, it's an anchor. So it's an NLP neuro-linguistic programming. An anchor means that when you hear something, it's going to instantly remind you of that moment. So I can imagine that if, you know, if you made love or had sex to a certain song that, you know, that was pretty amazing, that if you heard that song or somebody put that song on again, it might instantly trigger an arousal based on a past experience. And I'm sure there's a lot of sort of ways you can spin into that. But I think that music also, in the process of, you know, having sex, is pretty powerful stuff. So you could go anywhere from Sade, you know, some super sexy soul music, to some, you know, Nine Inch Nails, to some, you know, hard rock and banging music. And I think it's, you know, music is a cool accompaniment to sex, that's for sure.
Many years ago, there was a movie called Ten, and Bolero was prominent in this movie. And, of course, Bolero, Ravel's Bolero, it goes from slow and quiet to wild and frenzied, and the music builds not only in speed but also in emotional expressiveness. So the listener's mood is apt to change accordingly. Have you ever made love to Bolero? I mean, I don't know. It's a classic. I have, and I like it.
No, but I'm writing it down right now.
Okay, good.
I'm going to give that a shot. It sounds good.
Well, when you talk about...
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I cut you off. What were you just going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that was interesting what you said about not only the dynamically shifting from slower to faster and all that, but also just to have a deeper range of emotions and it enters a more of an emotional state. I think that's interesting because quite often with sex, people, they'll go more just in a tempo rather than... you know, from fast to slow or whatever, rather than a shift in emotion and it's such an emotional thing.
It is, and you know, think about some of the words in our language. Strike a sympathetic chord, harmonize, become attuned to our surroundings, and in music therapy, there is an idea around entrainment. So entrainment explains really how brain waves and heart rhythms and respiration, what else, emotional tone, timing, pacing, and sort of other organic rhythms can change subtly according to the music we listen to. And that's why music therapy can be really helpful. And then when we dance, we're in step or in sync with the music, and we can be swept along. And I think it's fascinating how our bodies can automatically adjust to the pace and the pulse and the rhythm of the sound. And so the music evokes an organized pattern of responses. So the emotional pulse of a great concert music entrains an entire audience. I bet you didn't know you were doing all of this. Scientifically, it's been shown.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, entrainment is powerful. And the other thing about music therapy, and I really would appreciate your response to this, is diversion, and this involves using music to deflect attention from pain and discomfort. And do you know that in the United States, I don't know what the rates are in Canada, but in the United States, there are more than 5,000 music therapists, and they work in hospitals, they work in rehabilitation units, healthcare and education facilities, clinics, nursing homes, prisons, schools, daycare centers, and homes. So music therapy can be quite wonderful. There was, I think he was a physician, and he wrote Oliver Sacks, and he wrote Awakenings, and he said the power of music to integrate and cure is quite fundamental. It is the profoundest non-chemical medication. How about that? Non-chemical medication.
Profoundest non-chemical. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's good stuff.
That's very
good stuff. Yeah, a friend of mine, he's won a couple Grammys. His name's Chinan Jenny. He was diagnosed with polio. He's from India, actually.
Uh-huh.
And his dad got him to be able to get the family out so he could get some medical attention. And the way that he healed through all of his early years in India was through music therapy. His dad would, I don't know exactly what he would do, but yeah, that is interesting. So it serves as a diversion away from the pain. I'm sure that the frequencies and the energy that's being delivered, you know, it must be the healing as well. Not unlike the Helen Keller thing where she put her hand on the speaker.
Exactly.
You know, where she can feel the frequencies. Those frequencies, you know, if you're putting out really positive frequencies, I'm sure that's got to be a really healing energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched this documentary on a wine vineyard in France, and a wine vineyard, it was a hobby vineyard, and there's all these grapes, and he put these speakers up around certain areas of the farm, and played 24 hours a day, he'd play Beethoven.
Mm.
And the grapes around the speakers grew way more juicy and big and lush and beautiful.
Oh, yes, I've read about that, yes.
The grapes, also in the vineyard, which I thought was interesting. So that's the frequency being that big in that effect.
Well, I've read nothing against rock music, but I've read that plants, when they watch them grow in a glass environment, did much better with classical music than they did with rock.
Oh, yeah.
But
I can see that.
But, so, your father gave you some really good advice, and it's also mentioned in the Ageless Living magazine. He said, a laugh a day will keep the doctor away. And you said, I learned this from my dad. And have fun. Smiling is huge. I love when you say this. When I see smile lines, I find that really attractive. And I sure have a whole bunch of smile lines, but I guess you find that attractive.
Yes. You're a beautiful woman. Very elegant, too.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners have seen Dan in a gala, but she was just gorgeous, unbelievable. Great.
Oh, thank you. We certainly had fun there. But so I wanted to just talk a little bit with you about this whole business of music and laughter, and the laughter piece is pretty important, because if you think about it, when confronted with a threatening situation, animals have essentially two choices, to flee or to fight. But guess what? Humans have a third alternative, and that is to laugh. When we laugh, we simply cannot be thinking about what's troubling us. So humor allows us to distance ourselves from a threat, and it can often short-circuit the sometimes paralyzing feelings of anxiety and helplessness. So I think people who like humor, who liberally use humor in their lives, and maybe even if they're funny themselves, we know this from a lot of research, they're less likely to suffer distress when confronted with negative life events. So I think if they can employ laughter and music and sex, they've got just an amazing trifecta.
Yeah.
Yeah. laughter, music, and sex. That's going to help people.
Hey, that sounds like a great project. I'm all over that.
Okay, maybe that's your next song.
Even in sex, I think it's funny how some people think they have to be so serious all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, sex is fun, you know. There's no have a good laugh in the sex sometimes, you know.
Yeah, no sex. I figured out that over the 30 plus years I've been practicing as a mental health professional, I probably have seen about 30,000 clients, and they'll because I'm a sex therapist, they'll often present with sexual problems. But I'm also a marriage and family therapist, so I deal with the relationship things. But in general, lots of people take sex very seriously, and the men in particular have performance anxieties, and they don't really know how to let go and play and relax and laugh and giggle. And sometimes music like your music can inspire them to relax a little bit and have some fun.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, it was kind of a goofy stage I was in my mind. And it was a little bit of a ego thing, I think. But mm-hmm. when I was making my first album, I just wanted to make it so that all my buddies could get laid. I was like, this is the perfect music for you to get
That's
laid.
Hilarious.
And I just say, when my friends would buy me, I'd just say, hey, you can thank me later. And it, you know, it's got a just sort of a vibe there. It's got some humor, and it's got a, you know, just kind of a lot of sexy content. And, yeah, I mean, they go hand in hand for sure. I did find that, I wonder how sex and sexuality, how that can, you're a mental health professional as well?
Yeah, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and yeah, so, and I'm, it turns out, because of some personal experiences, I'm also I don't have a grief counselor's certificate, but I have worked with people that are grieving, and I know about it, and I can be helpful there as well.
Yeah.
So it's about, you know, sex is about feeling alive and vital, and that's why I'm so in favor of older people remaining sexual. It's the fountain of youth, and to be sexual, to have orgasms, to meet and greet each other, you know, it's just, you feel so alive. And lots of people who are older kind of fold up their tents, so to speak, and they stop being sexual, and they stop feeling alive, and they start to die, you know, metaphorically, actually, you know. So,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I'm all for your music, sex is good, and the way, and then what we play just before the break, My Love, that's all about love and relationships and some about sex. Let's go back to what your father said to you. A laugh a day will keep the doctor away. What else did your father, what other messages did he give you that really have stayed with you and maybe have inspired you?
Well, just to keep things simple. You know, I've always had he's kept things simple, and he's a really happy person. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows what he really wants in his life and what he needs around him, and he surrounds himself with good people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that often, you know, a guy like me who's, you know, kind of all over the place, sometimes I can be, my life can get a little bit complex and complicated, and so I'm sort of all over the place. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's
mm-hmm.
important to focus on one thing and be good at one thing and sort of remove the clutter. My mom, though, has also been quite influential. I mean, she's instilled spiritual qualities, you know, in my life, and I think they're that. You know, that's an interesting topic, too. I mean, there's a,
a parallel with sexuality and spirituality as well. I find.
Oh,
I mean,
yes. Yes, talk about
that. You know, there's a lot of breath. And, well, I mean, just the breathing. I mean, like meditation and breathing and getting in touch with yourself and living in the present moment. I mean, these are all spiritual, you know, traits or spiritual things to do. They're not necessarily spiritual in the sense of a god or anything like that. I just mean in terms of, you know, living in the present moment and just being grounded and being here and now. And sex is a really fantastic way to do that because, you know, I mean, you can, everybody's mind can wander, but if you're living in the moment, then you're alive. And that's really, there's a book that I read, it was actually bought over, I don't know, 30 copies for people called The Power of Now.
Right.
Eckhart Tolle.
Right.
And, in, you know, he doesn't talk about sex in the book, but he did. Because I think it's a very deep book. It draws on a lot of ancient, you know, doctrines and religions and theories, and it just sort of simplifies it into a very, you know, a basic concept of living in the present moment, to live in the now, to sort of let your ego go away and to just live in your authentic spirit and who you are. It is really what living is and what will ensure your happiness and your vitality. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, sex is a fantastic way to find yourself or to help yourself to live in the present moment and to live in the now.
Yeah, and people have the best sex when they are in the moment and mindful. And it's in some ways, I think it's too bad that, I mean, you wouldn't expect him. He looks sort of like a troll. But he didn't talk about sex. But the book is powerful, The Power of Now, and you must have been, it must have helped change your life because you bought so many copies for your friends. And it is a powerful book about being in the moment. But I have a lot of women in my practice who multitask while they're making love, and it takes away from a lot of pleasure and even the ability to reach orgasm. So you want to stay really present, do the sensate focus, and...
They multitask while they're having sex?
Oh, yeah, lots of women
they do that.
Oh, yeah, they do that. But they're usually women that aren't necessarily totally wanting to be there. So
I see what you're saying, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, if you have music that's playing, that can help. You know, I think rock music can create tension and frustration, but on the other hand, it can release it. So I think rock music is like a two-sided coin that keeps flipping. Because, you know, on one hand, we know from lots of studies that pounding music is destructive to the ear, and yet the body to grow, I'm talking about adolescence now, needs to drum and move, sing and dance, and release pressure and find its own natural rhythm. And that adolescent body needs that to grow. Don't you think that's interesting?
Yeah, I do find that really interesting. Yeah, that's what a typical age in your life. My goodness, I mean, the adolescence was by far, in my life, the most important years in terms of who I am today. It's not just like, you know, you're reaching puberty, you know, girls a little bit before boys, but in that age group, there's so many social pressures at school. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's alcohol and drugs and all those sorts of things that are starting to come into play around school. It's around that age. And there's all these hormones that are running wild. And then there's, you know, people losing their virginity and the pressures of... Oh my gosh, that is such an important time to, you know, stay on the right track and hope. And I just know that I could have turned out to be a different person if you know, things didn't go right during that time, because I know that it's a very interesting time in the development of a human being, I find. It's probably the most important time.
It probably is. PRN wants me to stop a little bit before the top of the hour, so we're going to do that, and I want to play out Sex is Good. It's just right for love, lust, and laughter, because with my guests, I promote healthy, happy sexuality. And thank you, Kuba, for being such a fascinating guest and providing us with musical inspiration for great sex.
Well, Diana, you are one of a kind, and you're a blessing for everybody. So thank you.
Well, aren't you sweet? So I will be in touch, you and I, and let's have Melissa play us out with Sex is Good. Okay.
If any of the listeners do want to grab the album in the U.S., I just got an email, and it is up on the website, so KubaOhms.com.
And I'm going to put that on my... Okay, good. Thank you again,
awesome.
Kuba. All right, Melissa, play
You're
us
welcome.
Out. Sex is good.